Hello, everyone, and thanks for turning on The Blender, the weekly podcast from Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. I'm Daisy Sindelar, a writer at RFERL, and I'll be your host for a special Ramadan edition of The Blender this week. We're just over a week into the Muslim holy month of Ramadan, and the sun has set here in Prague, in the Czech Republic, so we're feeling very lucky to be gathered at the dining room table of our colleague from Radio Azadi, RFE's Afghan service, John Alekazai, his wife, Zarka, and their four sons, Abbasin, Helmand, Ekram, and Akram, who are ranging in age from 19 to 12. So thank you so much to all of you for having us. John, you broke your fast. You're feeling strong enough to speak?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so we're gathered for the iftar, which is the evening meal that ends an entire day of fasting. And moments ago, everyone broke their fast with a serving of dates. It's the traditional way to break the fast. And so, John, maybe you could start by just telling us what a typical day is like during Ramadan. And first, let's give you the mic.
The Ramadan is starting early morning around 2:30 and to 3 o'clock, and for breakfast we do normally, and then after that prayer, and then normal day we go to work around 7:30. For example, myself, for example, now the school is on holiday, they stay home, the kids, and also Zarka, she also stay home. But I go to work normal like the other days. There's no difference in my schedule or work. I leave 5 o'clock and then come home, take rest, and then pray, and then again waiting for iftar or to break the fast. And I think it's normal. Everything is normal. A little bit dizzy. I feel dizziness, but because no coffee, tea, those things, no drink, water, nothing. And for that reason, a little bit feel dizzy. But it's okay, it's normal. I don't feel any problem with or difficulties.
And Zarka, what about you? You have the special task of having to prepare all the food. Is it difficult to be around all these wonderful things and not be able to eat them until a certain time?
Well, no, not really, because we are used to. Just the hard thing is that when I'm cooking, I don't know how it tastes, you know, the salt or the pepper or anything.
Oh, that's right, because you can't try anything.
So, until we start eating, then we know, okay, we need more salt, more this or more that. Otherwise, it's not hard now.
Well, everything is delicious, so I think you obviously know what you're doing. But maybe you can explain to us a little bit about some of the things that are on the table and the order in which things should be eaten.
Mostly we make soup because it has more energy. It gives us more energy to break our fast with it, because it has meat and also like beans and everything. And then we start with some appetizers like pakora, which is this one. And then it's normal food like usually rice, which I'm going to bring it later, and some other things. It's Afghani rice, yeah, so...
John, maybe you can tell us a little bit also about the significance of Ramadan. This is the holy month because it marks the moment when the Quran was, or the original verses of the Quran were presented to the Prophet Muhammad.
It's a blessing month, and people all over the world, the Muslims, respect this month a lot, and they pray to their best. They give to charities, helping others. It's the month of patience and tolerance, and think about poor, the people who don't have anything to eat. The meaning that at least we should know that the suffering, the people don't have anything to eat. For that reason, it's the month of blessing. I cannot talk at present in Afghanistan, but before, nobody was fighting to each other's. And people stop fighting. For example, if 2 or 3 tribes were fighting among each other, and respect to the month of Ramadan, they used to stop their fighting in their feuds, because they say that in Ramadan it's not good or not allowed them the bloodshed and other things. And that was the time that I remember.
Now you say they used to.
Yes, unfortunately, these days everything is politicized. They know nobody respect the religion, and they have their own agenda, and I see it every day or hear it every day. There's fighting, still they're killing. it's not Islamic way.
Yeah, we shouldn't be like, nobody should be fighting each other. Like, but right now, we don't know what they are doing. They are using Islam in like the wrong way.
What about within the household? Does it become a more peaceful time for a family, or do people get grouchy because they're hungry? Or
well, sometimes, yeah, especially like close to the iftar time, we are a little bit.
Like, normally, for those who smoke, for example, cigarettes, other things. Fortunately, we don't smoke. None of us. This is one a good chance for us. We don't smoke. People who smoke cigarettes or heavy coffee drinker or something. Probably they feel more, a little bit nervous and also losing their patience. But we feel normal.
We are okay.
Okay, we're going to take a break for a moment and let everyone enjoy some more of their hard-earned dinner. In the meantime, we'll hear from Andy Heil, the managing editor of our English language website, rferl.org, who took a stroll through the corridors of our Prague headquarters to talk to other Muslim RFE staffers about why they are or aren't observing Ramadan.
First off, it's still relatively early in the month, the second week, so it feels like it's easy to tell just by looking at their faces which of our colleagues are observing the fast. Quite a few of them say that it's now in this second week that's the toughest, sort of before their bodies have steeled themselves to the rigors of Ramadan. First up, Merhat, who's from Kazakhstan. Our podcast listeners might know Merhat from our regular Uncovered segment. He told me about how his family approaches Ramadan.
I don't know if it is so much about religion. It's mainly probably about, as I said, I wanted to feel what my ancestors felt and live their life, how they lived, and see, for us, non-Russians in the former Soviet Empire, not to be Russified was... you know, to stick to our culture.
And in terms of, you mentioned what your ancestors felt. You said your grandmother used to fast in your family. Now, you're fasting. You have two kids,
I have two kids and my wife, and they do not fast. My children always ask me, why don't we fast? And they just, you know, I'm not against that, but you know, I don't think that it's. They are young girls, like 11 and 15. I don't know. I just, if they want to someday. It's up to them, but it doesn't mean that I don't allow them, but I just don't support that.
And when you talk about it, do they, they're just curious like kids are?
They're curious because they have some friends whose parents are also from the former Soviet Union, and they're of their age and they fast, and they just want to see how it works. So maybe someday I'll say, well, okay, let's try it for a couple of days. If you feel you can do it, you can.
Mirzo, from our Tajik service. Mirzo, growing up in Tajikistan, you said most of your family fasted, aside from your father, who was an official, and so it was discouraged by Soviet authorities. But your family fasts now, right? You have four children, all of them fast?
Yeah.
And at what age did you introduce them to it? And did you start with symbolic fasts for the little ones, or how does that happen?
For example, my littlest child... she's only 11. She was fasting for 5 days and then stopped because it was a little difficult for her, and we advised her to stop now and start again when you will be more ready for that.
Did she want to do it, seeing her brothers or sisters doing it? Did she want to join them?
Every day she is asking us that, can I start again? But we said that, please wait.
I'm talking to Farishta from our Afghan service. And Farishta, you had mentioned something about your first Ramadan fast. When it was, you were a very young girl.
I was 12.
12,
yeah.
Okay. Do you remember, obviously, this?
Yeah, because it was very dramatic in my life. I was 12 years old, and I was living with my grandmother by then. And my grandmother, like many other grandmothers in our region, believed that prayers from children are much more likely to be accepted by God. So she encouraged me to fast. And it was winter. It was very cold, severely cold. Like, we had snow, like, we had knee-high snow. Like, it was very, very snowy. And she was living in a very mountainous region.
So work was hard during the day.
It was very cold, actually. Mm-hmm. And in Ramadan, you know, you're not supposed to drink anything during the day or eat. So it was very, very dramatic. I couldn't forget it. And she promised me that she will buy me a dress for Eid, which is coming after Ramadan. And Anita was so tiny that actually the dress was not that very much attractive on me because I lost so much weight. And my and she was doing this while my father didn't know. So, I mean, when I went
your
back home,
you didn't know
that I was living with... he knew that I'm living with my grandmother, but he didn't know that she encouraged me to fast because it's sort of traditional. It doesn't say... it's not about... the religion itself, but it's about traditions that people believe that kids, if they pray, if they fast, it will be more accepted. So when I came back home, my father was scolding me, and he was angry at me. He said, like, why did you do this? Look at yourself, how you look and your health. And it was such a drama that I couldn't forget it. But my grandmother was happy forever, and she was like, yeah, you fasted for me for this. And whenever I used to fight with her, I would ask her to give me my 30 days back, or she would do this for me.
I'm talking with Altin from the Turkmen service, and I know your husband also joins you in the fast.
Yes.
What about the kids?
Yeah, kids joined us, and they love to observe Ramadan. It's kind of challenge for them, especially for boys. It's not a problem for them not to eat or drink, but It's a great challenge for them not to play computer games. Because Ramadan, it's not only about empty stomach, but it is about self-control.
Could you introduce it to them at a young age in a way that's not quite as harsh as full fasting for the month?
Yes, they started from observing Ramadan for only one day. And then step by step, now girls observing it with me during 9 days from starting the Ramadan. And it's okay with them. They told me that they felt really, really relaxed and good. Like it's really helpful for them.
Because children are also up odd hours for children, right, during Ramadan? In other words, they're eating dinner late and eating breakfast very early, right?
Yes.
Is that tough on the kids? The waking hours, being awake at times when they otherwise wouldn't.
It's kind of, maybe it is the most difficult thing to wake up at 2:30 in the morning. It is night time, and it is really, really hard.
Do you hear lots of complaints? Are you?
No complaints. But it is difficult to wake up at that early time.
So we're back at the dinner table with the Alakazoy family, John, Zarka, Abbasin, Helmand, Ekram, and Akram. And we're about halfway through our meal, eating...
This is a rice pilaf.
Kabuli pilaf, yeah.
Mm-hmm. With currants and carrots.
Raisins,
and meat. And what is the dish down at the end of the table?
It's called mantu. Mm-hmm. It's basically... It's like a...
A dumpling?
Dumpling, mm-hmm. With yogurt on top of it and some ground beef. And it's traditional Afghan food as well.
Do you guys eat like this every night?
Pretty much.
Wow, you're very lucky. Ramadan is held yearly during the 9th month of the Islamic calendar. Correct me if I say anything wrong. And this comes after the sighting of the new moon. And it lasts 29 or 30 days. And it ends with a big celebration called Eid al-Fitr. And because it follows the Islamic calendar, Ramadan moves around on the Gregorian or the Western calendar. And so that means sometimes it's taking place in the winter or sometimes it's taking place in the summer, as it is this year. And so, Abbasin, I wanted to ask you, in your opinion, what's easier, Ramadan in the winter or Ramadan in the summer?
Well, I think in the winter for sure, because the days are really short. And, for example, we eat at like 5 or 6 p.m. and during the winter time. And here it's around, I usually see 8:30 or 9.
So as you say, we're living fairly far above the equator, so the days are very long at the moment in Prague. And as your father said, you had to get up at about 2:30 in the morning to eat your morning meal before sunrise, and then dinner began around 8:35. So that's more than 17 hours straight without food or water. And this, of course, isn't for one day. It's for an entire month. For those of us whose religions or customs don't require us to fast, the idea of having no food and no water for 17 hours is incredible. So I wanted to ask, do you have any secrets for how do you get through the day? Aren't you feeling very hungry and thirsty at some point?
If you sleep a long time.
I should say I'm speaking to Ekram, yeah. The 14-year-old, correct?
Yeah.
And you sleep a lot?
Yeah.
How long do you sleep?
From 3 p.m. about after I finish my meal. Yeah, 3 a.m. To 3 p.m. or 4 p.m.
And that's the best way of handling?
Usually over the years, I mean, we start from when we were really young, so you get used to fasting and you get used to this month, so you expect it and your body's used to it by that time because you start from like 12 years old or sometimes younger, and over the years your just body gets accustomed to it, so it's not really a challenge, and then it's still hard, but you're used to it.
So Ikram, you're 12. Is this the first time that you're fasting?
I did it last year.
Okay. Would you mind passing Ikram the microphone? I'm Akram. Good heavens. Okay. I'll get it right by the end of this meal. So this is the second year. How was it last year? Was it hard?
Last year, yeah, it was pretty hard because I was always really hungry and I had school at that time.
Last year it was during the school year. Mm-hmm. So how did you manage?
I just didn't really think about it, you know.
Was it hard when you're in school and you're not even living in Afghanistan or a predominantly Muslim country where a lot of people would be fasting? You're living in the Czech Republic where some people may not even know why you're fasting, and lots of people are, your schoolmates are eating lunch in front of you. Does that make it more difficult?
Well, I just sit in the classroom. I don't really go down to the cafeteria to watch them eat or something.
And, of course, your father's back at the table now, but I was going to ask you, are there ever moments where you just sneak a little food?
Oh, no, not really. Only my head really hurts, I asked if I could eat.
Oh, okay. And that is allowed. Can I ask Helmand a question? Because you told me something very interesting about yourself, but you were off mic at the time. You said that you're a boxer?
Oh, yeah.
And you're about to leave for Canada for training?
I have a fight in Canada in September.
I just have to ask, how does a boxer train during Ramadan, or does he take the month off?
I trained a few days this week outside. I have a punching bag outside just to test it out if I can actually go to training. And so tomorrow's going to be the first day where I actually train and spar and see where it goes.
How is that going to be possible?
Last year I was doing school and training. I came home at 7:30 every day, and then I'd eat. But it's pretty hard.
I imagine. Is that typical for athletes in Muslim countries? Do they continue to compete and train during Ramadan?
In my gym, there was one other Muslim fighter he didn't fast because he said that he can't with training and stuff. So,
well, I wish you luck. It sounds pretty tough.
Just a reminder that you're listening to The Blender, the weekly podcast from Radio Free Europe. RFE brings radio, internet, and television news programming to 21 countries across the former Soviet Union, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iran, Iraq, and the Balkans. If you'd like to get in touch, it's very easy. Drop us a line at podcast@rferl.org or leave a comment on the Blender section of our website. And remember, you can download episodes of The Blender from our website or by subscribing on iTunes. A new episode is posted every Friday.
З вами Радіо Свобода.
Радіо Фарда Кушніка.
Айче Радіо Європа.
Машал Радіо.
Азатить Радіоса.
Азатицюн ДТМ.
28 languages, 21 countries, one voice. Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty.
So we've just finished an amazing dinner prepared by our hostess, Zarka, and now we've graduated into the living room and we're having some dessert, including a huge bowl of fruit with watermelon and peaches and apples and strawberries and something else that looks very wonderful. Can you tell us about it?
Well, that's firini. It's a sweet dish. You can say it like a rice pudding. Close to the rice pudding. And during the Ramadan, we must have something sweet after dinner with tea. Doesn't matter if it's like firini or whatever, but we must have something sweet, even cake, a piece of cake, or I don't know, maybe our body needs it or something. We feel good when we eat sweets after the...
And this is flavored with cardamom or...?
Cardamom, almond, and it's milk and... Yeah.
Well, it looks wonderful. Now, you and Zarqa, if I understand correctly, you both grew up in eastern Afghanistan, and then you both left separately in the 1980s, and you went to Canada and you went to Norway, and then you had your family and you moved here. So you've had Ramadan in Afghanistan, in Norway, in Canada, the Czech Republic, perhaps some other places as well. How has it changed from place to place, or does it stay the same?
Well, it has changed. For example, in Afghanistan, everybody, the families, the friends all together in one neighborhood, everybody is there in mosque, for example. You go there for iftar, you know, for fasting. But when we left the country, everything were changed. First, myself, I went to Pakistan in 1982. It was a different environment over there in the different conditions. The life was not easy. Then from there to India, from India to Thailand. I studied in Thailand, and then I was settled in Canada, finally. And then in Canada also is not bad. It's a multicultural society. It's the one of the biggest community after United States of America. And in North America, it's huge, like 60,000, 50,000 Afghans are living there. And there are some mosques, community centers. It was good. But in Czech Republic, we are not a big community here, only colleagues from the radio, and still everything has changed. You know, we cannot have the same thing we had it back home, but still it's going on.
Zarqa, what about you? Do you ever feel homesick when you are celebrating Ramadan here in the Czech Republic?
Well, when I left Afghanistan, I was 13, so... I was fasting in Afghanistan too, but I moved to Pakistan, and then from there I moved with my family to Norway. And it is hard, yeah. I feel that that is like a big difference between the Islamic country and the Western country, so, yeah.
Who can tell us about Eid? Is it going to be even more lavish than this meal we've just had?
This Eid, Eid Fitr, it's only the celebration after Ramadan. And people, it's normally 3-4 days in Afghanistan, 3 days holidays, but in many cases 4 days holiday. People celebrate Eid. They go the first day of Eid, the morning, to each other's and says, and the celebrations. People eat together, sweets, tea, and other kind of the foods they have together. Just first they go to elders, one who is elder in the family. And then after to other relatives, if somebody is sick or ill in hospital somewhere, they just go and say hi to them and bring them gifts or something. It's kind of the joy and celebration.
So in Eid, we should have new clothes. Everyone should have new clothes. That's tradition, and also like we must have. And the reason is that because they said if you have new clothes on Eid day, God won't ask that why you have it. So
so you're allowed to go shopping.
Yeah, so we just like 2 or 3 days before Eid, we go shopping, and we try to like everyone in the family should have new clothes and relatives. And also if we can afford it, even like if we know poor people, like they cannot afford, we try to provide them something too.
And also giving money for the kids. They call Eid money. And also in the first day of Eid, each, like, parents give money for their kids and other family.
Well, in Canada, because we had a big family and many relatives, so, for example, each relative would give, let's say, $20, $30, and if you say, like, 100 relatives, so it would be a good profit for Eid. Here, for example, not really a big family, so it's less. Our father makes up the rest. So.
That sounds like a pretty good deal.
Yeah, but the way that we grew up, like... We had big families, grandmother, grandfather, uncles from both sides, mother and father sides, and all like other relatives. So we really enjoyed it.
What is the ideal feeling at the end of an evening during Ramadan? You've had your dinner, you've had your dessert, you've had your green tea. How should you be feeling inside and out?
From a religious point, I thank God that I was healthy, I was okay when I like kept fast another day in Ramadan. We had food, enough food. I mean, that some people don't have the food and they're desperate, and thanks God we have everything. And we're grateful and thankful from God. And we're happy, and together with family, all together we are here. And for that reason, it's wonderful, it's happiness. And thank you for you to come here, and it was so good.
Well, thank you very much for having us, and we'll be here next year for Ramadan dinner. It was so delicious. And with that, we'd like to close out our special Ramadan edition of The Blender, and a very special thanks to the Alekozoi family for their extremely gracious hospitality. We've really had a wonderful evening. And if you'd like to watch a video of the Alekozai's Ramadan dinner, check out our website at rferl.org. And if you've got anything you'd like to share about your own Ramadan traditions, send us a note at podcast@rferl.org. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week. Let's go.